And now it's time for this.
Sport
on the Claire Byrne Show
with Visa, official payment partner of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Everything's a tap-in with Visa.
And we're going to look ahead to all of the weekend sporting action. I'm joined in the studio by Off the Ball's Colm Buhig. And because it's All-Ireland hurling final weekend, we're also joined by All-Ireland winner and former GAA president, Nicky Brennan. And Nicky, we'll come to you in a minute. How are you today, Colm?
I'm very well, Claire.
Are you ready now for the weekend?
I am, yeah. This is the biggest weekend in sport ever, Claire.
So clever. Much. I was reading Joe Canning this morning because I thought that was a good thing to do in advance of all of this. And he said that for Galway to win, they'll have to get everything right and Limerick will need to be a little bit off. And he thinks that that's a big ask. Not impossible, but a big ask.
Yeah, probably. Like I think Galway caught people by surprise for people outside the county and maybe Leinster. Because all the talk this year was about how strong Munster is at the start of the year. And then the Munster Championship after the first round wasn't as great as people expected. But then, like, the dismantling of Cork in the semi-final was a sight to behold because the hurling that they played was pretty extraordinary. When you give Galway a bit of time and space, they puck it around like few others, with the possible exception of Limerick, an upstep Limerick. This is Galway's first All-Ireland final in 8 years, which was against Limerick. For Limerick, they haven't been to a decider since 2023. So it's set up very nicely. Like, my instinct, if you're asking me how it's going to go, is Limerick from muscle memory alone and the fact that they've come back after 2 years of disappointment. But Galway were so impressive and kind of largely have been in the second spell of Micheál Donoghue's reign as senior manager that this game could be actually extremely tight.
Okay, Nicky, what's your instinct off the bat?
Well, look, the teams have just been announced, actually, Claire. The Limerick team has just come out in the last couple of minutes and Mike Casey has been at fullback instead of Dan Morrissey. That's possibly to curtail Jason Rabbit on the Galway team. And Keith Lynch, who was injured the last day, now he did come on. He's back in at midfield as the team captain. Galway run chain. So people can read, I suppose, a certain amount into that. Look, let me come into the game as favourites. No question about that. Their track record is superb. But I give Galway a very good chance here. I think Galway could even win this match here. I think they're in a great chance. My only concern is they have conceded 14 goals in this year's championship. And that's a bit much. Galway have conceded 8. So they will need to make sure they close up shop at the goal area. And that's not going to be easy against a Limerick team that has a number of players in there that maybe haven't been involved before for a while. They have don't have a huge amount of experience. There's Aidan O'Connor and there's other lads on the team. Aidan O'Connor and Shane O'Brien, for example. Newish enough to the team, Adam English, has had some experience in Cathal O'Neill. They're experienced, but not at the same level. So John Kiely has managed to get a good mix of youth and experience there, and Gotti has a lot of experience in his team.
Yeah, it's an interesting Limerick team, Nicky, there that you just read out. If Galway are to do this, how do you think they achieve it?
Well, the big thing here is that if you look at that half-back line, and you'll be well familiar with it, Dermot Burns, William O'Donoghue and Kyle Hayes, huge big men. Clearly, Galway cannot poke that ball down on top of that half-back line continually. They'll have to engineer either getting the ball in behind that line somewhere or another or driving it short and coming and working from out the field, which they've done very well against Cork. They built defence from the back very well, but they worked their attacks from the back very well with short, off-the-shoulder passing where players were not too far away from another, but they went at pace, broke their tackles, and they hit a lot of points from 70, 80 yards out the field, which is something big. Now, with a lighter ball and with a good sunny day, hitting a ball 80, 90 yards is no big deal to any of these guys. So they could nullify the effectiveness of the Limerick half-back line if they're to win this match. That's how they would do it.
That's what you think could happen. What do you think will happen?
Well, obviously, for every tactic like that, John Kiely will have something up his sleeve, as will his coach, Paul Kinnerk. So that's one of the intriguing things about Galway. They have great people on the line. Paul Kinnerk is the coach for Limerick and Francis Ford is the coach for Galway. They are very, very good coaches themselves. Franny Ford has a great track record for Indian schools and hurling, colleges hurling as well. So look, they're going to work that one out. And it's like a lot of things. You have to work that on the day. You have to see how things are progressing. You build a tactic well before. These guys will have met every night for God knows how long. They have tactics worked out. Sometimes you have to go to plan B or plan C or plan D, depending on the way the game is going. Mm-hmm. But the Limerick full half-back line can be very influential. If they're allowed to get on the ball a lot, they will build a lot of scores.
Yeah, just going back to Joe Canning again, like he said that Galway would have to find something that Limerick is brilliant at and be better than Limerick. Like, he is portraying this as a huge mountain to climb, even though clearly and obviously he's great faith in Galway. Do you think it will be that difficult for them, Nicky?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it, Claire. Of course, it's very difficult. But this Galway team has been building well under Micheál Donoghue. He took the decision to bring in a number of new players. Now, to be fair, Henry Shefflin had brought a number of players on as well. He has worked with him last year, built on him last year. They put in an exceptionally strong winter of S&C to build up the younger lads. And look, they're coming through. There's a hunger in the camp at this stage. And I give them a very, very good chance. As I said, they could win this game here. Limerick will be favourites. But these Galway lads are coming with no fear of Limerick. Limerick haven't, you know, they haven't been in the last two All-Ireland finals, but they're one of the, they're probably the team of the last, no question, of the last decade or more, without question. But this Galway team, there's something about them, and mm-hmm. they're building well. And I like Micheál O'Donoghue, who's a manager, he's a great way with players as well.
Well, Nicky, I hope we have a good game. That's all we want, a spectacle of hurling on the day. Thanks so much for being with us and enjoy it, Nicky Brennan there. Now, we move to the World Cup, will we? Mm. This is going to be juicy.
Yes.
Like, Argentina just want to cement Messi's reputation as the greatest of all time, which, you know, most of us feel that that's already been done. Mm. Then you have the ethic of the Spanish team. Like when you saw them the other night in the semi-final, they're just electric, you know, and so they just look so bonded, bounded, just, you know, they're a band of brothers.
Yeah.
You know, compare the Spanish team and the relationships that they appear to have with the England team, you know? I just didn't see that there with them, you know?
Mm. Yeah, they were kind of playing like strangers at the end of that match.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, they wouldn't have been used to each other. The 11 that finished that game wouldn't have played together. Mm. But it was just the manner in which they tackled that.
Having,
you know,
said that, though, the same kind of relationship appears to be there on the Argentina team.
As the Spanish team, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
It's not even a look. It's just you innately know we're going to do this pass and you're going to be there.
Like, great matchups. We talked there with Nicky about Galway and Limerick, right, in the All-Ireland final. That'll be excellent because of the way the both teams play. This is perfect, Argentina-Spain in this World Cup final, because you have Spain, who have only conceded one goal in the entirety of this World Cup. They haven't gone 1-0 down. And you have Argentina, who have this very niche fetish about going 1-0 down. They seem to love it. When they go 1-0 down, they come alive. Mm-hmm. And we saw that against Egypt earlier in the tournament. And we sure as hell saw it against England the other day. So if Spain go 1-0 up, which you could very much feasibly see, I don't think Argentina will panic. And that itself could spread fear in the Spanish minds. Could.
So don't score early against these guys.
You score against these guys, not alone does it necessarily not make a difference. It actually motivates these guys to get going properly.
It's fire in their bellies.
The only thing is getting the ball off Spain. You know, they're so comfortable in possession. They love the football. Argentina have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it. But when it's going well, you saw the last quarter of an hour against England. It was like, God, where was this Argentina side for the first hour of this match when they were just kicking lumps out of the English?
Yes.
And maybe they'll try the same against the Spanish. But I suspect that the Spain players will be too quick on the ball. So if they do kick lumps out of them, they'll very quickly get booked. Mm-hmm. And then they're in trouble big time. I'd be fascinated, right, if Argentina were to go 1-0 up in this game. Because Spain, it'll be unprecedented at this World Cup. And then Argentina, will they stick or twist? Funnily enough, will they have the same question to answer that England had of themselves when they went 1-0 up against Argentina?
Ask Thomas Tuchel what they should
do.
Oh
my God.
Ugh. It's actually uncomfortable watching this, isn't it? The reaction that continues to unfold. Those who are backing him, those who are not. It's just horrible.
Well, he has to live with that. And I mean, like I said, it's a strong term. Like, you'll have segments on this show that are far more important than what we're talking about here. But in sporting terms, he has to live with that decision, Thomas Tuchel. Because everybody, Claire, from the most casual football fan to the most ardent one to the biggest expert in football, every single person had the same question. What are you doing? Why are you making these substitutes? Why are you retreating so much so early in the game? Mm-hmm. They were asking for it. And Argentina answered that question. And now Thomas Tuchel will have to field that question. Forever we're talking about David Beckham's redemptive arc the other day against Argentina and France 98 to the 2002 World Cup. You know, if England win the Euros in 2028 or if they win the next World Cup, fair enough, under Thomas Tuchel, there's the answer emphatically. But ultimately, people aren't going to care about what England do under Thomas Tuchel until the next semi-final or final. And that's minimum 2 years away.
Do you care about the match on Saturday? The France-England third place match?
No, not at all.
No, nobody does.
Not at all.
And I sort of feel sorry for the players on both sides having to go out there and play that game. It's a horrible thing, really.
Like, it's an ultimate quiz category of, like, who came third in the last few World Cups, you know? I think unless it's a real underdog, maybe.
Bronze medal final.
It's been relabeled. As what Adam Partridge said, they've rebadged it, you fool. It's not the third and fourth place playoff, it's the bronze final. Wayne Rooney was incredulous at that rebranding, yeah. But that's what it is. So someone's going to win the bronze medal on Saturday night between England and France.
Might as well give them a big wooden spoon. Andy Farrell then in the rugby saying Ireland's going to have to give the performance of their lives to beat New Zealand in Eden Park. Can they do that? I mean, that is a huge ask. How many years is it? How many games?
Yeah. 32 years since New Zealand have lost at Eden Park. Stretches back to 1994 against the French. So it's 50-odd games since then. Ireland have made 4 attempts at Eden Park to win. So the last time they lost there was actually in 2022, the first of a 3-game series, which Ireland won. They came back in that series and they won 2-1. They beat the All Blacks 4 years ago. That was fairly seismic here and over there as well. They're a very different team 4 years on under Andy Farrell, Ireland. First of all, they're missing a lot of key personnel. For example, Caelan Dyer's captain, Jack Crowley, who was the more in-form out half going into this Nations Championship. But Sam Prendergast starts. Jack Honan plays at 8. It's a decent Ireland side. Robert Balakoon's back into it. The left-hand side was the big question. This is the post-James Lowe world we live in. And Jimmy O'Brien's got the nod over Jamie Osborne. New Zealand have a lot of fear factors to worry about. Maybe more principally on Will Jordan, the flying winger, who has recently broken the points record scoring for New Zealand. And he's a flyer. When he gets going, there's no stopping him. So maybe that's why Jimmy O'Brien's playing. This will be very tough, not just because it's New Zealand and the All Blacks and the Haka and all that. And they have a new manager in Dave Rennie at this Nations Championships. It's a new era. They're playing some good rugby, but it's the Eden Park factor. These guys.
Well, the hack is going to feel different in Eden
Park, exactly.
Isn't it?
Like 1994 was the last time they lost there. So, look, Ireland have done okay so far. They beat Australia the first time around with a strong team. They made a lot of changes against Japan. They were a bit flawed, but they won the match. They're both 2-from-2 going into this game.
Have you been keeping an eye on the Open, the golf as well this morning? Because it started earlier, didn't it? It's underway.
It started earlier, yeah.
Rory McIlroy had a terrible day yesterday. He sort of redeemed himself at the end.
Yeah. You see, the good thing, it's like the leader is still Jackson Sober on 5-under as we speak right now. And like Lowry isn't actually that far, Rory McIlroy, we'll get into Lowry. Rory McIlroy isn't that far behind despite his flawed performance yesterday. So like the 7th and the 8th yesterday, he bogeyed really gettable putts. And then the 9th, he had an unbelievable drive which set him up for an eagle and he eventually got a birdie. Then the 10th, he bogeyed again. And the 17th, he went into the bunker. He had this crazy round, which sounds catastrophic, but he's only a few shots behind. Mm-hmm. And Shane Lowry, on the other hand, he was 1-under going to bed last night and he birdied the first this morning.
Oh, that's going
so what
well.
Do we know? So he's 1-under for the day, he's through 4 and he is 2-under, Shane Lowry. So he's only 3 off the lead. The 2019 Open champion, of course, Shane Lowry.
There is a stat that I saw. Every single golfer in the top 10 in the world is from the United States or the UK.
The last European winner of the Open was the aforementioned Shane Lowry. Mm-hmm. It's been all Americans and one Australian. It's Cameron Smith, 22, who went to live.
You could look at that as, you know, it's a sign of the centralised power in the world of golf. Or you could say, aren't we brilliant?
Totally, yeah. Well, it's a really hard tournament to retain, to win back-to-back. A bit like the Football World Cup, very rare. The last player to win the Open consecutively, our very own Padraig Harrington, 2007, 2008. And poor old Padraig Harrington was bottom going to bed last night. 10
oh,
over.
Was he?
Yeah.
I was going to say, he's the GOAT, isn't he? He is.
We did, when there was no sport happening at the start of COVID all those years ago, we did the Mount Rushmore of every county. And I think Padraig Harrington got into Dublin's one. And Dublin's one was obviously the most stacked. Yeah, so he's bottom heading into today and 10 over, Padraig Harrington. And we were just talking about him being the senior open at the US Open. Like, he was like too good for the seniors and he's still competing with these young bucks.
Yeah, well, as he should be. He should be. And as we always say, a terrible nice fellow as well.
Oh, the best interviewee ever. Yes. He will give you anything from any question.
Just tells you stuff. Colin, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us more often than you normally would this week because everything has been happening. It's all been kicking off and enjoy the big stuff over the weekend. And now it's time for this.
Sport on the Claire Byrne Show with Visa, official payment partner of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Everything's a tap in with Visa.